Begin the current daf, Masechet Bavas, daf Kuf Nun Tes. Begin on the bottom of Kuf Nun Ches and Beis, four lines up in the bottom of the Amud, where the Gemara continues in a related discussion from the previous Mishnah, which, as Rashbam points out, that actually the teaching that we're going to start off with actually is erroneous, is mistaken, and ultimately the Gemara is going to resolve that teaching. Now, it's just because in the conclusion the Gemara is going to bring a proof, an inference from our Mishnah, which was the halacha of Nafla Bayis Alav Va'alavim, regarding that if the person and his father are in the house and they collapse and they both die, and regarding so who inherits the money, who is the last one alive, so that's why the Gemara brings this teaching over here. Says the Gemara, Sholchu Mitam, they sent from over there, from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, the following teaching. Ben Shalava Benichsei Aviv, if a son that borrows against his father's properties, Bechaye Aviv, when his father was still alive, Umeis, and then the father passed away, says the teaching, B'noi Meitzi Miyad Halakuche, so the son could collect from the consumers who bought. Says the teaching, B'zuhi Shekasha B'din Mamas, and this is one of the difficult laws in monetary law. To which the Gemara quickly jumps and asks on this teaching. Lava, when it says that he borrowed, meaning he borrowed in when they had collateral by his father's assets, so my mapik. So what's he taking away? In other words, because he borrowed money when his father was alive, what is this teaching that he could go ahead and collect from the consumers what his father or he sold when his father was still alive? What do you mean? He never took anything from his father. It was never in his possession. What would give him the right to then go ahead, because he borrowed money when his father was alive and collateral to what his father had, to allow him to go ahead and collect from what his father sold when he was still alive? But moreover, another difficulty with this teaching is, Lekuchas Mayavidite. Where did anyone mention anything about consumers that he's collecting from consumers? He just borrowed money. How do we understand this teaching? And the Gemara says, you're right. Eli'i itmar, hachi, as a continuing type of kofan, and tesam, and alf, itmar, it must have been a different teaching because the way it's read over here, there's no understanding, there's no translation of what the words mean. Rather, the teaching was as follows. Ben shemachar benichsi aviv b'chaye aviv. A different halacha. A son, which the basic words are the same, but it's a very different teaching. A son who sold his father's properties when his father was still alive. So for example, let's say we have Reuven, who sold the portion that was fit for him to inherit from his father Yaakov's property when his father was still alive, but he was ultimately going to inherit a certain portion. When his father was still alive, he sold that portion. Umeis, and then this Reuven, the son, died when his father Yaakov was still alive. And only after Reuven died, then his father Yaakov passed away. Now that comes Benoi, so the son of Reuven, let's call him Chanoich, he comes and he's Meitzi, he takes away these properties which his father Reuven had sold when his grandfather Yaakov was still alive, but from the Reuven had sold what was fit to come to him from his father Yaakov. He comes and he could take that away, Miyad HaLekuches. He could collect that from those who bought these properties from his father Reuven when his grandfather Yaakov ultimately dies. Now the reason for this is because what Reuven sold wasn't his yet. It's what's called Ro. It's fit for him to get it when his father Yaakov would pass away. But Reuven never got it that the people that he sold it to should merit what he sold to them. And that is because just like we find that what's fit for a person to have, there's no lien on that, so too you can't sell that. As the Mishnah teaches in Becheres, Daf Nun Beis, and Aleph, that neither regarding a woman in her ksuba or the daughters to get their sustenance, or neither regarding the yavam, all these individuals, they do not collect by the shvach, and neither do they collect by something that's ro, which is fit to come, only they get things which are muksig, which are in possession at the time of the death. And that's the halacha. Now Rashbam points out that we're not concerned for that the Gemara will ultimately reject and explain that the halacha of our Mishnah is talking about a different type of a situation, because the whole questioning and answering that the Gemara is going to have for the next Amud is only asking on the next point of this teaching. In other words, Rashbam says that this teaching that the Gemara is saying is ultimately correct. It's just on the next part that the Gemara has difficulty with all the future interpretations, because the teaching ended that they sent from Eretz Yisrael, v'zuhi shekasha b'din imamnes, and this is one of the difficult teachings in monetary law. Now, that the Talmud gets busy and says that what's difficult with it, and ultimately the Gemara is going to answer and say, it is difficult. You actually cannot bring a proof to this halacha from our Mishnah. In other words, we're bringing in this teaching because ultimately this will be the interpretation of what the teaching was. It's just that the Gemara first assumes that what's so difficult about it And ultimately, the Gemara wants to even say, what do you mean? Our Mishnah says the same idea. On that, the Gemara is going to say that no, there's no proof from our Mishnah. Therefore, it is a difficult halacha. However, although it is a difficult law in monetary law, that is the halacha, and that's what they were sending from Eretz Yisrael. Although it's difficult, but that is the halacha, even though there's some difficulty, as the Gemara is going to continue and explain this. So, what is the difficulty of this law? Says the Gemara, because v'leim rulei, let the consumers tell to this son, to this oikom chanoich, wait a second. Avuch Mazmin, your father Reuven, sold what it was fit to, for him to get from his father Yaakov. Va'at mapik, and you're going, and you're who you inherit from, what rights do you have to this inheritance? It's only through your father. So, because a person could only inherit what his father had, and your own father sold it. So how could you go ahead and take it away from the consumers? And therefore, that's a difficult halacha. How is it possible that this chanoich could take it away from the consumers? To which Gemara responds, why? My kusher. Why is this so difficult? Tell me, Matzi Amar, maybe this chanoich ben Reuven could tell the consumers, Mikayach, from the power of Yaakov, who is Avu de Abakasina, I am inheriting, not through my father, but from my grandfather. And the reason for that is because what's called B'nei Banim Harim Kebanim, grandsons have the same status as sons. In other words, what they're saying is just like my father Reuven, he was able to inherit his father Yaakov, were he still alive when his father had passed away, so to me, I also inherit my grandfather Yaakov from Gzeiras HaKasam, not because I'm inheriting from my father, that's how I'm getting to my grandfather. And therefore, these properties who never came to my father because he died before his own father passed away, his sale was never valid. And therefore, I am coming not through my father, but from my grandfather. And therefore, of course, I could take it away from you because what you bought from my father was non-existent. And says the Gemara Teda, you should know that Chanoich, the son of Reuven, could directly inherit his grandfather Yaakov, not through his father Reuven. The Chassid, like it says, the Pasuk can tell him. It says, Tachas Abisecha Yuvanecha. In place of your fathers will be your sons. You'll make them princes, governors amongst the whole land. Now, this pasuk, when it's talking about tachas abesecha yivanecha, is talking like, in this case, to this Reuven. Tachas abesecha, in place of your father, who that's Yaakov, yivanecha will be your sons, minichanoich, from the fact that it doesn't say tachtecha yivanecha, in place of you will be your sons. No, it says in place of your fathers, meaning your sons could take direct inheritance from their grandfather, from your father, and therefore says the Gemara, what exactly is the difficulty with the teaching? It doesn't make sense that was the teaching where they said zuhi kasha b'din mamon. It's not so difficult. It makes a lot of sense why the grandson would be able to take away from the consumers because they inherited straight from their grandfather, not from their father, and therefore the father's sale is not valid. Ella rather says the Gemara, if you want to say that they had sent a teaching from Eretz Yisrael, which was one of the difficult laws in monetary law, it was not like the way we explained it before, because as you said, right, it's not a difficult law. Rather, ikashi hokasha, if there's a difficulty in regarding a teaching that they sent from there, was the following teaching. Ben b'chayr, shemachar chelik b'chayr b'chayav, a firstborn son who sold the double portion, the firstborn portion that he was going to get from his father, he sold this when his father was still alive. Now, umeis, and then the firstborn died. So, for example, let's say we're calling him this Reuven. He sold his chelik b'chayr, which was fit to come to him from his father's assets. And then this Reuven passed away, b'chayy of when his father Yaakov was still alive. And only after Reuven passed away did his father Yaakov pass away. And that says the halacha that his son, b'noi, his son, who is chanoich, he comes. And he's meitz mi'ad al-kuchas, he could take it away from this firstborn portion that his father Reuven had sold. He could take away from the consumers and take it for himself as if his father Reuven had not sold it. Because this chanoich inherits the portion of the firstborn of his father from the assets of his grandfather Yaakov. Now, even though his father, the firstborn, had died when his grandfather was still alive, still, in spite of that, the Mishnah teaches us, we had this on Kuf Tezayin Mabez by the Sugya B'nai Tzlavchad, that the daughters of Tzlavchad took three portions. One was the portion that their father should have had on his own right, because he was from the Yetzim Mitzrayim, he left Egypt. The second one was that he should have divided with his brother Hefer, who died without any children. And the third one was the portion of the Bukhar, where he takes two portions. Although their father Tzlavchad died before their grandfather, we see that the daughters take his portion of the Bukhar. So therefore, in this story, Chanoich could take the firstborn portion that their father had sold before their grandfather Yaakov had passed away. And that's what the halacha says. And this is a difficult law in monetary law. Because avur mazvin iu mapik, what? Yeah, by b'nai slavchad, we could understand they could inherit the portion of Bukhar of their father. But in this case, where do you think the b'nai slavchad get it from? From their father, who got it from, who he's not around anymore, but he's getting it from his father. In this case, Reuven sold it off. So how could the son, who's only getting the portion of the Bukhar from his father, go ahead and get back from Lekuches what the father himself had sold? And therefore, it's a difficult law. Now, on that continues the Gemara. V'chita minit, you're going to say, no, it's not a difficult law. Hachanam here also. Amar mikoich avu de abu kasino. What do you mean? The chanoich could say he's not getting it through his father Reuven. He's getting it straight from his grandfather Yaakov. And that says the Gemara, imu koich avu de abu kasa. But if you're going to say, as we answered before, that it's coming directly from his grandfather, b'chelik b'chayr maya vidite. So then what exactly does he get, what he's taking back from the consumers, the father's firstborn portion, if you're coming through the father, okay, that's the right you're getting through your father. But then you run into the problem, but the father already sold it. How can you take what he sold? Obviously, you're going straight. If you're going straight, then you're not a firstborn. So then how are you getting that firstborn portion that you're trying to get back from the consumers? That's a difficult law. Tursigma responds back, why? My kusha, why is this a difficulty in monetary law? Dilma Motzi Amar, maybe Chanoich could say that Mikoyach did he's coming through the strength of Yaakov Avu de Abakasina, coming from the strength of my grandfather, as we quoted the pasuk before, Tachas Abasecha Yibanecha, that I am inheriting my grandfather Yaakov as if I am Reuven. Because Ubamokim Av, he takes the place of his father Reuven, Kamina. That's what I'm standing in. In other words, it's as if I am the firstborn from the Gzeres HaKasa, as we learned in the Mishnah regarding B'nai Slavcha, that they take the place of the father. So I am not going through my father, I'm actually taking his place, but I'm getting straight from the grandfather. And therefore the sale of my father is not significant, and therefore ask the Gemara, what's the difficulty with that halacha? It makes a lot of sense why that would be, that he would be able to take the Chelek HaBachar from the consumer. So Eli Kasha HaKasha, rather says the Gemara that if there was a teaching that was sent from Eretz Yisrael, which is difficult, it must have been the following teaching. If Reuven knew testimony, he had witnessed something to be an aid for Shimon, Bishtar, and he had signed that in the document, before that it had been that Reuven became a gazlan, before he became a thief, and his name was signed on the document that was a loan to that was from Shimon, where he was testifying for Shimon, and then, however, at a later point in time, Manasseh gazlan. He became a robber, and that invalidated him from being a witness. As the pasuk says in Shmai Schav Gimel, Atashas Yatchem Rasha Liz Eit Chomes. You cannot get yourself together with a wicked person who's a thief to be as a witness. Now, so that's what the halacha is teaching, that although generally a person is believed to say, when let's say there's signature signed on a document, you have to do what's called Kiyum Hashtar. We don't know if these are real witnesses that sign. So you have to have it verified. A person generally could say, that's my handwriting, as the Mishnah teaches in Ksubas, and that will verify the document. But on that, the halacha is, however, now, who ain't made al ksav yaday? He himself cannot testify regarding his own signature, because everything he says right now, we assume to be a lie from the fact that we see regarding monetary law, he's a robber, he's a cheater, he's a thief. And therefore, maybe one witness who was invalid had forged it, or maybe he himself wrote it and signed it today, falsely. Maybe it was not from like 7 months ago when the document claims, which he signed on, because he's a liar. He actually wrote it today. So he himself cannot verify his own signature. But however, others, they could testify, as the Gemara will explain in the conclusion what this means. But according to the assumption right now, the Gemara says, yeah, that's a difficult law in monetary law. Why? What do you mean? He himself is not believed regarding his signature. Acher mehimni, what others will be believed? In other words, why do we say he's not believed? At the time when allegedly the document was written 7 months ago, he was a believable person. He wasn't a kazlan yet. The only concern is that maybe today is when he actually signed it and he made believe he wrote a date from 7 months ago. And the reason why we don't believe him, that we assume he's lying, is because he's a gazlan. So when we recognize the signature even through other people, what do we gain? But yeah, they recognize the signature, but maybe he signed it today in a forgery as a lie. So why does it help that other people recognize the signature? And that's why it's a difficult law, monetary law, why others would be able to verify his signature to make the document kosher. Toshima responds back, my kosher, why is it difficult? Dilma, I could explain to you that the halacha is as follows. Maybe it's talking about that his handwriting was already established in what's known as a hempik, but best in the courts. A hempik is something that's attached to a document saying that it was already verified by other people, and we already know that, which that verification was before he was a gazlan. We can't say the concern that we said before. Rather, it's the explanation of the halacha is that there are other witnesses, what we call these acherim, that we said could be me'idin. They're saying, we testify that we sign on the handbook. In other words, we had originally verified this document that this other guy was signed on who later became a gazlan, but we verified at a time when he was not a gazlan yet. So therefore, since at that time, the guy himself would have been believed to say that's his handwriting, so we at that time also verified it. Now, therefore, now there's no more difficult to say, what do you mean? He's not believed, others are believed, because these other people, they're testifying regarding their own handwriting on the handbook, not on his own, not on that thief's handwriting on his signature. And therefore, the document is verified by itself, because once we know that the handbook is true, the handbook is what verified the document, they're not verifying the document now. You're right. That guy is not believed, therefore even others recognize it wouldn't be believed. It's but that they had signed on the henpik before he became a thief, and now they're verifying the henpik. So that's why it would make sense. So why is this a difficult halacha in monetary law? So ele ikasha hakasha. Rather says the Gemara, you're right. If there was a teaching, it was as follows, and that is what the difficulty was as follows. Similar case. Hayadela edis bishtar. Somebody knew testimony regarding someone else, and he wrote it in the document. Actually, tipulei birusha, until he didn't have an inheritance from that person. Meaning at that point in time, he was not what's called negei b'davar. He wasn't, didn't have any biases, which that makes you invalid from being a witness. He had no relationship with that person. But the halacha is, ultimately, he did inherit something from that person. So he's related to him monetarily. So the halacha is, hu eino yochel lekayem ksav yadei. So therefore, he cannot verify his own signature because there's a bias over here. Aval chayim yochel lekayem ksav yadei. But others, they could verify his signature to validate that document. Which the question then becomes, again, as the Bach actually puts in these words, but that's difficult. Hashti iuloi mehemen, what I mean, he himself is not believed, and the reason is because maybe he wrote this today. Sacher mehemen, these others are believed, maybe he wrote it today. How does it help? Tushik Gemara responds back, what do you mean? My kusha, why is it difficult? Dema hachanami, maybe here also, is tomak ugan shahotlik sabiyoda bebezin. Maybe they're not verifying his own signature. They're verifying their hempik that they had originally written before he became negei b'davar on that document that he had originally signed. So therefore, it would make sense why achem would be mehemni, because they're verifying their hempik, and even though he's not believed, they verify his own signature. Eli ikash hakash, rather says the Gemara, right, it must have been a different teaching, a similar type of a teaching, and this was its difficulty. Hayidei lo be'edus actually nasa chesna. Somebody knew a testimony for someone else before he was related to him, before he became his son-in-law. Now, problem is, Vanasa Chesnai later became his son-in-law, which, therefore, who ain't a made ksav yodei, he cannot verify anymore regarding his signature, which would have ramifications for his father-in-law, because that's a relative who cannot testify. Aval chayim eidim, but Allah said, but other people could testify and verify his signature, which will have ramifications for the father-in-law's document. Which difficulty is, hule mehemni, he's not believed, because we say that there's a psul over here. Sacher mehemni, how could others be believed? Again, the same question as was said before. Now, and b'chitem, and if you're going to say, as we had refuted this, hachinami, that here it's also talking about, kun shehochzik sabiyot bebezdin, where the others that are believed are not on his own signature, but rather because it was already verified through a hempik, which is a verification in its own right, and now they're verifying that verification of the hempik, and that's why Acherim are believed. But for Amr of Yisib, Amin Yumi, Amr of Nachman, he said clearly that this halacha is afa pishle hochzik sab yodah bebezdin, that it pertains even if there is no hempik, it was this document was not verified, and it's told by regarding the signature of the current son-in-law, that if he's not believed, why they believed? So the Gemara still responds back, oh my kusha, but what's the difficulty with this halacha? Dilma gzeres melechi, maybe I would tell you that this case of becoming a son-in-law is very different than having a Yerusha from that person, or becoming a gazlan. Why? Because the reason why a son-in-law is not believed is only because of a decree of the king, meaning of Hashem. It's what's known as Gzeiras HaKasev. The Ihu LeMehemet. The Torah says that a relative is not believed, is not trustworthy, cannot say a testimony. V'acherim mehemni. Now, others are believed, but v'la mishum de mishaker. It's not because we assume that that relative is lying. I mean, if it was regarding a lie, then you have the same thing we had regarding all the others' interpretations. If he's lying, what is up with other people are verifying? Maybe he wrote it today. And he's just writing that it happened 7 months ago, which was before he was related, but it really was today. But the thing is, answers the Gemara, why is it a difficult law? Maybe the reason why Achir Mehemni is because, of course, we're not assuming that this relative is lying. It's only because the Torah says that a relative cannot testify. So, of course, someone else can verify his signature. Because if you don't say this, Moshe b'Aharon l'chaisnam, Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen for their father-in-laws. You think they can't testify because they're not trustworthy? No. The king Hashem decreed that they cannot testify for a relative. So says the Gemara. Here also it's a decree of the king that he cannot testify regarding his handwriting for his father-in-law. But it's Xeris HaKosav that he's not trustworthy. And not because we assume that maybe he made a forgery and wrote it right now. And therefore, what's so difficult? Of course others would be believed because you're not going to say that, what do you mean? You're testifying regarding his handwriting? Maybe this only wrote it today and he forged it and you're testifying on something which was a forgery. No, we don't suspect that. Just like any document, we don't suspect that. It's not because we're concerned for a lie, it's just a gzeiras hakasav. And if that's the case, what makes this halacha into a difficult law? So Ella rather concludes the Gemara la'olam kedabrin mekar. We go back to what we said originally, that the case that we're describing over here, what shalchu mitam, which is a difficult law, a monetary law, is talking about, where a son sold what was fit for him to inherit from his father, and then this Reuven passed away before his father Yaakov did, and then his father Yaakov passed away, and that we said that Reuven's son Chanoich could go ahead and take it away from the consumers. Now, or the kakash shalach, but this, that you had a question on that interpretation, that tachas abesecha yuvenecha, the pasuk says clearly that a grandson could inherit directly from the grandfather. So we had the question, so that why is this a din kasha b'din imamnes? It's not so difficult, it makes sense. If he was coming straight from his father, yeah, then it would be difficult. How can you inherit from what your father himself sold? He's not coming. The pasuk says he could go straight from his grandfather. So of course he could take away from the consumers. And that says the Gemara, no, ahu bebracha ksib. That pasuk is talking about a blessing. It's saying that the righteous people will have sons and grandsons who are righteous as them to inherit them, as actually the end of the pasuk says, tishesemu l'sar mechal aretz, you're going to have princes amongst you in the land. It's a blessing, but it's not talking about a halacha in the laws of inheritance, and therefore we do not have a biblical source for this halacha, and therefore if there's no source, it is a difficult halacha. It would definitely make sense that a son inherits from his father, who he's getting from his father, and if the father himself had sold it, how could you go ahead and try to get it back from the consumers? That's why that is the halacha that was sent, which is a din kasha b'din imamanis. Now, that the Gemara asks, is it really possible that you're going to say that this pasuk is not a law in the laws of inheritance, but rather it's just a blessing that grandfathers will have such righteous grandchildren that will inherit them? However, as we continue, Tamid Beis, but that would sound like, aval inya din alay, but regarding law, then you don't say this halacha? Meaning, the Gemara is essentially asking and saying, you think we don't have a source for this teaching from a previous source? Meaning you're saying, okay, the pasuk is not a source, you're saying, because that's by a bracha. So we're stuck with like, okay, this din is a very difficult din. Another thing we ask, is that really so? You don't think we have precedence for this law? Why is the teaching from the Amirul and from Eretz Yisrael sent as if, you know, this is difficult? Which sounds like that they can't bring any proof for their words, and therefore they say, although this is the halacha, but it seems difficult, it's a very difficult law. Another thing we ask, Bavatanya. But we learn, and this is the Mishnah and Kavnan Zayin Meraf, that seems to say clearly that there is precedence for this halacha. The Mishnah taught, Nafala bayis alav alav, if a house collapsed and killed a man and his father, or alav al-marish of him and the one who would bequeath to him. Now, moreover, v'hais alav ksubis isha b'alchayv, this person who died at the same time as his father, he had no money, his father had money, and we're not sure who died first, this person owed a ksuba to his wife, and he owed money to creditors. So, Yerusha av Oimrim, so the inheritors of the father said, Haben Meis Rishon. Oh, the son died first. V'achkach Meis Av, and then the father died, and therefore the son never inherited from the father, and therefore we inherit from the father. Whereas the Baal Chayiv, but the creditors are saying, no, Ha'av Meis Rishon, the father died first. V'achkach Meis Aben, and then the son died, and therefore the son inherited, and therefore we could go ahead and collect from his estate the debt that he owes us. That's what the Mishnah there is discussing, and then the Mishnah there discusses what's the halacha. But one thing the Gemara wants to point out is, my lav, isn't it obvious that when it talks about Yerushei Ha'av, when it says that they are the inheritors of the father, that they're trying to claim that they inherited the father, that who's that talking about? That's b'nei. That's sons. In other words, when we have this halacha of the son that the house fell on him and his father, is, for example, if the house fell on what we would call Reuven and his father Yaakov, and this Reuven owed a ksuba to his wife or money to creditors, then when it says that the Yoshe Ha'av are claiming that the son died first and then the father, it means Chanoich, the son of Reuven, is saying that their father Reuven died first and then their grandfather Yaakov died, which they're coming to say, we're coming to inherit straight from our grandfather Yaakov, not through our father Reuven, because if they're going through the father Reuven, obviously that would mean that Reuven got it and then they get it, and that for if Reuven had it, of course the creditors would be able to collect. So that's what it means, Yerushi Ha'av are the sons of Reuven. And my Rishab, when it says the other case of when this person dies and his those who bequeathed him, it means Ache, it means the brothers of Reuven. That's what the case would be talking about. So says the Gemara, if you would entertain to say that a person cannot come, and that's what the Gemara is asking, saying your difficulty with this law is, you're saying, well, where do we find that a person can inherit straight from his grandfather? The pasuk you said is not approved because it's talking about a blessing, and therefore it's a din kasha. Says the Gemara, what do you mean? Our Mishnah in Daf Kuf Nazayin proves this concept. Because if you're going to say that a person cannot say he's coming to inherit straight from his grandfather, because the chiksiv tachas avisecha yivenecha, because although we had this pasuk that says, in place of your father will be your sons, that's bebracha ksiv, that we said, oh, that's toma by a blessing, not regarding the laws of inheritance. But then if that's the case, so kimeis haben ve'achakach meis ha'av, so then even in the case of if the son would die first, and then the father died, my hava, what does that help? Meaning the Yersha Av, which we're assuming that means to say, Chanoich, the son of Reuben, the grandson of Yaakov, is claiming that their father Reuben died first, and then Yaakov passed away. What does that help them? Namely, if still the creditor should tell them, Yerushas Avu and Kosha Kilna, I'm taking the inheritance of your father because you don't inherit directly from your grandfather, you inherit from your father. So even if your father died first and then your grandfather, but it's only going to go from grandfather to your father to you. Your father's not alive, but you're getting it through him. Obviously, says the Gemara, it must be that what we see in this Mishnah is, from the fact that the Yerusha Avu claiming that it goes to them and not to the Bachayim, is that no, we're not going through our father, we're going through our grandfather. So you see clearly this halacha that you can inherit directly from the grandfather. Why is this considered din kasha b'din mamonos? Says the Gemara, loy. That's not the interpretation of our Mishnah on Kufnan Zayin. When it says Yerusha'av that the inheritors of the father are claiming that the son died first and then the father, it doesn't mean the sons of Reuven. It actually refers to Echav, the brothers of Reuven. They're saying Reuven died first, and then our father Yaakov passed away, and therefore we inherit all the properties of our father. And Reuven, our brother, didn't have any portion in it because he died first and he didn't have any sons. We hear for sure they're not coming to inherit through the medium of their brother Reuven, because they're also fit to inherit their father Yaakov just like him. And when it refers to Merishav, that's the other case, that when this person and his bequeather died, which now you can't say as the first interpretation that refers to his brothers, because in this case we're saying that the Yerusha Av are the brothers, it would mean Achidu Avua, the brothers of the father, meaning the brother of the father Yaakov, which is Esav, who is the uncle of Reuben. When the house fell on him and on Myrisha, meaning on Esav, who's his uncle, his father Yaakov's brother, so the Yerushim of the Myrisha of Esav, let's say the brothers of Esav, they say that Reuben died first, and then Esav died last, and therefore we're inheriting our relative Esav. Because when Reuben, the son of Yaakov, is not inheriting the property of his uncle Esav in place of his father Yaakov, because he's already dead, because Reuben died first, they're claiming, and then Esav died. And the creditor is claiming that no, Esav died first, and then Reuben died last, and therefore Reuben did inherit the properties of his father Yaakov, who passed away, from his portion and his brother Esav, and he took his portion. We now, you don't have any more a proof to the concept of tachas avisecha yivenecha, because regarding this law, we don't find in our Mishnah any proof for this halacha to the halacha of the shalchu mitam, because it's not talking about that case. It's not talking about the grandson inheriting straight from the grandfather. It's talking about a totally different case. It's talking about brothers inheriting their brother or an uncle. And that's why, since we don't have any precedence for the halacha, neither from the pasuk nor from our Mishnah, that's why we said it's a din kasha b'dinei mamonos. But again, the Rashbam points out, as we mentioned before, however, that is the halacha as they sent from Eretz Yisrael this halacha, because that's obviously what they hold. It's just that they said we don't have an explicit proof, and therefore it is a little bit of a difficulty if we don't have precedence for this. And same thing applies to all the other halachas that were mentioned. They all are halachas, but the only difficulty with them were, which is, but what's their difficulty? They're not difficult, and therefore, how could that be the shalchu mitam? The difficult one was this one that we described regarding inheriting from the grandfather, which halacha is that he does inherently, that does inherit directly from the grandfather. It's just that it's a din kasher because we don't have any proof to that halacha. Continuing on a related discussion, which we mentioned this idea where the possibility of a grandfather passing away and then the grandson, we had said the possibility that inheriting from their father who's already dead in the grave, if we said that he doesn't inherit directly from the grandfather. So a related discussion, the Gemara says, blame the name of Rav Sheshes. To ask Rav Sheshes the following question. Let's say there's someone called Yosef, the son of Rachel, who died when his mother was still alive. Then his mother Rachel passed away. So the halacha is, ben mahu sheyerish es imay bekeva. What's halacha? Could a son inherit his mother when he's already in the grave, as if he's alive? To go ahead and then bequeath it to his paternal brothers. For example, Reuben, the son of Yaakov, who he's his brother from a different, they have different mothers from Leah, which is his paternal brother. What's the halacha? Do we say that ultimately a mother passed away is supposed to go to the son, but that's only if the son's alive? Maybe if the son's dead, it doesn't go to the son. To the contrary, it goes to her relatives, meaning from her father's family. Or do we say that no, even if he's dead, he will inherit it, but he doesn't have his own inheritance, but his paternal brothers will get it that way. So Amalu Rav Sheshes, Tanisa Rav Sheshes said, we learned this in the Braisa. The Braisa says as follows. So Av Shenishba, the father was taken into captivity, Umeis Benoi B'Medina, and the son, his son died in the birthplace, meaning where they lived. Or the other way around, Uven Shenishba, or the son was taken into captivity, Umeis Av B'Medina, and his father passed away in their birthplace. So says the Braisa, Yersha Avu, Yersha Ben Yechleku. So now both are dead. We don't know who died first because one was in captivity, one was home. So in both these cases, the inheritors of the father and the inheritors of the son, they divided. Now, and that proves Rav Sheshes, well, hey Chidami, what's the case talking about? And that is, Ilem Kedigtani, if you would read it as it's read, as it's said in this Braisa, but that's difficult because Hai Ninu Yersha Avu, Hai Ninu Yersha Ben, who is the inheritors of the father and who are the inheritors of the son? In other words, if there's no sons, neither to the father or to the son, so then the relatives of the father would inherit both of them. And if there are sons to the son, well then they would inherit both their father and the son. So therefore, what does it mean that the Yersha Av and the Yersha Ben are splitting it? It's the same people. So El Lav Hachikam rather proves Rav Sheshes, which would then answer the question, rather must be the Braisa's Togman as follows. Av Shenishba, if a father was taken into captivity, Umeis ben Bita ben Medina, and his daughter's son, his grandson, but specifically his daughter's son, passed away in the birthplace. Now, the inheritors of the son are the relatives of his father, which is his mother's husband, which is not the same as his maternal grandfather. Or, Uven, and the Bach takes out the word Bita, because it would just mean it would be referring to a son, to a child, but it could be also Ven Bita of who we're going to talk about, the son of the daughter, Shenishba, who he was taken to captivity. It's basically the case in the reverse. Umeis Avi'ima B'Medina. And however, his mother's father, his maternal grandfather, passed away in the birthplace. Now, V'lo Yadin Haimenayim Inspiration. Now, we don't know who died first. That's what the Braisa was saying. Yersha Av Yersha Ben Yachloku. The inheritors of the father and the inheritors of the son, they'll split it, which are two different paternal families. Therefore, it makes sense that they're two different people, and that's halacha, since we don't know who died first, that's why they're going to divide it. Now, therefore, from this revised Braisa, proves Rav Sheshes, v'emisa, now if it were to be the case that a son could inherit his mother, even when he's already in the grave, so nehi nami deben meis bereshah, so even if you're going to say the possibility that the son died first, still the halacha would be difficult. Why is it that the Yersha Av split it with the Yersha Ben? The Yersha HaBen, the inheritors of the son, should inherit everything. Why? Because you should say it follows. Lirte lavua de'ime bekivri. Even if, let's say, he died first, but he should still inherit his mother when he's in the grave. In other words, when his mother's father passes away, so then his mother inherits his grandfather, and then he should go ahead and take his mother's place, even though he's in the grave, as we said, that he can inherit his mother when he's in the grave. And then, so then they should go ahead and then pass on to his paternal brothers, who they inherit the son. So then why is the halacha that the Yershei Ha'av split it with the Yershei Ben. Alav Shema Menor, rather says Rav Sheshes, what you hear from this is Ein Ha'ben Yerush Es Imay Bekev Lahanchal Achen Me'av. It's the halacha is not that the son, meaning the son, does not inherit his mother when he's in the grave to go ahead and then pass it on to his paternal brothers. That's the proof in this price. Amalei Rav Acha Ben Yumi La'Abai says Afan Anamatenina. We also learned the same thing in the halacha of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, Nafal Abayas Allah Val Imay. If the house collapses on him and his mother and they both pass away, we just don't know who is first. Eilu ve'eilu moidim she'achloiku, both Bisham and Mesila, says the Tanakhama, agree that the Yerushei Ha'em and the Yerushei Ben divided. Now, on that proves the Gemara again. Ve'emis, and if it were to be the case that the Ben is Yerushei Sima Bekever, so Nehi Nami the Ben Meis Bereisha, even if you're going to say that the son died first, Lirtei Li'imay Bekivrei, still what rights do the Yerushei Ha'em have? Even so, we should say that the son inherits his mother when he's in the grave, almost as if he's the second one to have passed away, as we said, because even if he died first, when his mother passed away, he could inherit his mother when he's in the grave. And then, and then he should go ahead and bequeath it and pass it on to his paternal brothers, who are the Yerushei Ben. Rather, we can infer from that, from the fact that we don't say it goes all to the Yerushei Ben. Rather, it's divided between the Yerushei and the Yerushei Ben, that Ein HaBen Yerushei Simer Bekever, a son does not inherit his mother when he's ready in the grave, Lahanchal Ach Mena'av, to go ahead and pass it on to his paternal brothers, Shmamina. Now, ask the Gemara B'Taima, what's the reason why we don't say he is the Yerush? Why can't this happen even if he's already dead? So Amar Abaya says, because Nemra Siba Beben, it used the term of transferring regarding the laws of a son. The Pasuk says in Bemidbar Lamed Zayin, Lamed Vav Pasuk Zayin, says, B'lei Sisab Nachal L'bnei Yisrael, you should not transfer the inheritance of the Jewish people, Mimate Almate, from one tribe to another tribe. Rather, it should stay in the family. The Nemra Siba Bebal, it also talks about transferring regarding the laws of the husband, which is the Pasuk later on in Pasuk Tes, says, you should not transfer the inheritance from one tribe to another tribe, rather each tribe keeps it in their tribe, which is that it does not transfer to another one. So on that, this teaches us, which these psukim are brought on Perek Yashneichel, and we talked about this in Nafkaf Yud Beis and Mabeis, which tells us, masib ha'mur babal, just like the word transferring that it says by the husband. In habal yerush asish to bekever, a husband does not inherit his wife in the grave. In other words, if his wife already passed away, meaning she's already in the grave, before her father, his father-in-law passes away, although if his father-in-law passed away first, then his wife would inherit her father. And then when his wife passed away, he would inherit her. But when she's already dead, he does not inherit his father-in-law because it's not going to go from the father-in-law to his wife to him because she's already dead. So af siba amur beben, so to the transferring that it talks about by the son, Ein ben yerush es ima bekever, so too the son does not inherit his mother when he's in the grave, lahanchal ach mena'av, to go ahead and then transfer it and bequeath it to his paternal brothers, which Rashbam points out, although it is gzeirah shavah, but it's not exactly the same. When it talks about the son in the grave, it means when he's in the grave, he will not inherit his mother, which is in contrast by the case of the husband. It's talking about that, not that the husband's in the grave, it's talking about that the wife is already dead, and then he will not inherit his wife when she's in the grave, not when he's in the grave. But in spite of that, that's the Gzeirah Shavah teaching us that still you could compare the two halachas, that just like over there does not help in the grave, so to hear it also does not help in the grave. Now the Gemara concludes this perek, discussing a topic related to the perek, which as Tosfos points out, because since here in this sugi we're discussing in whose possession are these nechasim, as we use the terminology in our Mishnah, is nechasim b'cheskasan. So therefore we bring this incident, which also talks about in whose possession will we be machzik, is it in the chazakah lekeach of the consumer or in the chazakah the meicher? But Taisa does wonder, because the Gemara brings this sugya two times in one mesechta here, and cheskas abat and deflam and av, and why does it repeat it? And so to the Rashbam says that he already explained this sugya in the beginning of Perek Cheskas Abatim, and it's just again because our Mishnah spoke about Nechasim Mecheskasim, that's why he discusses it over here at the end. So the Gemara brings Ahud Amalei Lechavri. Someone told his friend, Nichse de Bar Sisin Mezemnin Lech. I'm going to sell you all the properties of Bar Sisin, which was the name of somebody. Those properties, that collection, the Bar Sisin collection, I'm selling you. Now, Havichad Arad Ave Mikariya de Bay Bar Sisin. There was one land that was called from the household of Bar Sisin. Now, however, Amalei, the seller told the consumer, Halav de Bay Bar Sisin. That's not from the Bay Bar Sisin collection. The Kruyu Hud Mikari de Bay Bar Sisin is just called that, but it's not part of that collection. Therefore, what I sold you did not include that land. So Asa Kamid Rav Nachman, he came in front of Rav Nachman, Ukmi Biyad Lekeach, he gave it to the consumer got it, not like the seller is claiming. On that, Amalei Rava Rav Nachman, but Rava asked Rav Nachman, Dina Hachi, that's the law? But Amaitse Mechavera Olav Araya, someone that wants to take away from his friend, is it coming upon him to bring proof? The consumer wants to take it away from the seller. Up until now, the seller was machzik, and he wants to take it away. He has to prove that it was from the Bar Sisan collection. How can you go ahead and give it to the lekach? It should belong by the meicher. That was that machlekes. On that, asked the Gemara, v'rami d'rava d'rava, v'rav Nachman, d'rav Nachman. We seemingly have a contradiction in both Rava's and Rav Nachman's opinions from a different machlekes that he had. Because the Ahuda Amalei L'chavri, somebody had said to his friend, my boy is a b'hai besa. What are you doing in this house? Amalei said to him, what do you mean, menach zavanta, I bought this house from you. And moreover, v'chalta shnei chazaka, I actually consumed, I've been here already 3 years, I already proved my ownership by being machzik in it, by having lived here for the amount of the years that it requires to make a chazaka. So Amalei, so the seller said to him, what are you talking about? I was here inside in the inner chamber all along, you're living here, didn't prove anything. If you were here alone, fine. But I was here. You're like my guest. That doesn't prove because you're a loafer here for 3 years that you own it. And therefore, you were never machzik anything. So also coming to Rav Nachman, they came in front of Rav Nachman. Amalei, so he said to the claiming consumer, Zil bar achalaskal, yeah, you got to go and you got to prove your consumption. In other words, you have to prove that you had bought it, although you were machzik. And therefore, in this case, Rav Nachman had actually put it in the chazaka of the meicher, which is not like the previous halacha that he had put in the machzik of the lekech. On that Amalei, Rav Nachman, Rav asked Rav Nachman, Dina Hachi, this is the law? The one who wants to take away from his friend, is it coming upon him to bring proof? And says Rav, who's the machzik? The muchzik, the one who has been there already 3 years. We assume that it's his. Now, the seller wants to claim that he was here all along. He wants to take it away from that guy's chazaka. He has the onus of the proof. So we see Rav was putting in the cheskes of the lekeach, that the lekeach gets it, not like the previous halacha, which he said that no, when we have this doubt, the meicher gets to keep it and not the lekeach. So says the Gemara, kasha d'rava d'rava, we have a contradiction in Rava's opinion. D'rav Nachman, d'rav Nachman, we have a contradiction in Rav Nachman's opinion. Says the Gemara, no. D'rava d'rava l'kasha is no difficulty in Rava's opinion. Why? Hacha over here, in the first case of Bebar Sisan, meicher koi b'nichse, the seller is holding on to his possessions. He sold all the fields. Up until now, we knew everything was his. Now he's claiming that this was not included. He's the muchzik. So therefore, Rava's opinion is the muchzik gets to keep it until we know otherwise. Hasim over there in the second case, when this alleged consumer who was machzik in this field for 3 years, loikeach koi b'nichse. He is the one that was in possession of the fields because he's the machzik. He's been already 3 years. The original seller is not the machzik anymore because this guy already did a chazaka. So he's the meitzeh mecha b'levaraya. So therefore, Rav is not a contradiction. He always gives it to the machzik. In the first case, the mecha was the machzik. In this case, the lekech is the machzik. The Rav Nachman loy kasha, and also Rav Nachman's opinions are not difficult. Hach over here in the first case, kiven the amalei de beibar sisan, because since the seller said to the consumer, I'm selling you the beibar sisan collection, Umakari the Bebar Sisan, and this field is called Bebar Sisan, Allah Dide Rami Ligluya. So is it coming upon the seller to reveal and to put in that clause to love the Bebar Sisan? He has to prove that it's not Bebar Sisan because the assumption would tell us that this is Bebar Sisan because it's called that. And if he wants to say that it's not, then he has to prove otherwise, and that's why he gave it to the Lekeach in that case. But Hoch over here in the second case, when we're talking about someone who was machzik in someone else's fields in someone else's house for 3 years, and the seller saying, wait, I was here all along. And that says the Gemara, Rav Nachman held, lo yehei, that the machzik should not be any better, el denokat shtara. Just like someone who's holding a document. In other words, the whole halach of chazaka is, in regards to the case of proof of purchase, takes the place of the document. In other words, I don't have my document after 3 years, so let my chazaka take the place of the document. On that side of Nachman, so it's not any better than the document itself. So if a consumer says, hey, I bought this house from you, look, is the document showing that it's the deed of the sale? So on that side of Nachman, wouldn't we tell a consumer when the seller's contesting and saying, it's not true, I never sold it to you, wouldn't we tell him, okay, validate your document, and then you can take possession. So that's the same thing over here when we're saying zil barach elaskel, you have to go ahead and prove your purchase of it. It's because, yeah, the chazak is just like the document. Just like the document, you have to prove its veracity. So you have to prove the veracity of your chazakah, that you were the only machzik and he wasn't there all along. And that's why he said that it retains by the meicher But again, it's only because each one had a logical claim why it'd be one and not the other. And therefore, there's no contradiction in Rav's opinion or Rav Nachman's opinion. We shall return to the 9th Perek of Masechet Baba Basra, Perek Mishameis.